You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. There we go. Welcome everybody. Oh, that's right, that didn't happen on those who are listening on Wolf Spirit Radio didn't hear that because it was on the other channel. Anyway, it really doesn't matter. Thank you very much. There's a bit of a wartime spirit going on here, like we used to say. You know, everything's falling apart. Poor old Nighthawk is in the middle of a storm in Kentucky and they have no power. And so we are currently burning fossil fuel in order to bring you live radio. Hawk is, he's got several fossils and they're running on bicycles and treadmills and he's getting them all to, he's whipping them and making sure that they produce enough juice just to get onto the air with you today. We're also on Wolf Spirit Radio. We could be on Tiernasau. Yeah, let's put us on. Let's just go on Tiernasau in Ireland. There we go. We're just coming on there, coming online there. So welcome to Tiernasau in Ireland and Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, everything else. Thank you. Right, now we're here. This is right. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just coming in. So the situation with Studio B. Right. Okay. So we're on Studio B. I think you can all hear us today. My guest. Let's just focus here. Right. I'm going to take a deep breath. Let's just play the meanwhile somewhere else jingle. Meanwhile, somewhere else, where it's nicer, and the temperature is calm, is warm, and the weather is calm, and yes, it's a warm summer evening here. My guest tonight, after all that, Earth anomalies, Lunar anomalies, Mars anomalies. Yes, lies, lies, lies. From NASA, what do you expect? Nazis are still active. Never a straight answer. We are tonight joined by Karen Christine Patrick. Lots of three-name people. I should call myself Jeremy Simon Perron. No, that's my name. That's my old name. We will be discussing these and many others. I had her partner on last night, Brett Colin Shepherd, on Ever Beyond. What a show. Do try and tune in. It's currently available free on the archives at Wolf Spirit Radio. You can check it out. Brilliant, brilliant show. And I think tonight is going to be equally brilliant, brilliant, because there's a level of frequency that I can detect here. So before we go any further, would you like to introduce yourself to Revolution Radio B and everybody else? Thank you, Karen.
Oh, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, very, very okay.
Okay, good, because, man, I just never know from my location in deepest, darkest Texas how it's going to work out. But sounds great. Thank you to talk to you, Jay. Thank you for every person listening, because you talked about frequency. It's like whoever's listening to you right now are very special people on the planet, in my opinion, and really glad to be with you.
Wow, thank you. Well, on behalf of my audience and all the other audiences, thank you. Let's start on the Earth, and then we'll kind of spiral outwards, and then see where it goes from there. What do you think about that?
Sounds good.
You have been talking about Earth anomalies. Now, my mind boggles, and I wonder how far down that rabbit hole the anomalies go. Are we talking about forbidden archaeology, out-of-place artifacts, things that are under the ocean, things that are under the soil in the ocean? I mean, where does the scope of this lie?
Pretty much everything that comes up on my group, which is a Facebook group, the Earth Anomaly Research Society, and we're just on the cusp of hitting about 4,000 fringy loving people, and absolutely every kind of, well, I cut my teeth as a young person on Charles Fort, the writings of Charles Fort, and Fortean types of things, and so I've been very fascinated with the edge, you know, the stuff that's outside of what I call the consensus reality show, right? What they tell us in our society, religion, politics, media is supposed to be there. Well, there's a bunch of odd things that don't fit that. And you were talking about anomalies. I love that because here's the deal. They give us a consensus reality that we all agree to because it supports the corporatocracy, right? And basically, they put all these other things in the weird, paranormal, strange, bizarre, Ripley's believe it or not categories, anomalies. An anomaly is something that is something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. So basically Charles Fort was, you know, in his book, Book of the Damned, he was calling them on it way back then of how many things that they threw out of consideration in order to come up with a consensus in the sciences in particular. And that's quite the book, by the way, Book of the Damned by Charles Fort. And basically made it all anomalies, made it weird, paranormal, strange, bizarre, and made a whole genre out of it in media, which I call the paranormal ghetto, or the in the Dewey Decimal System, the 000 books, right? Because, you know, 0 point books. I don't know. But the thing is yes, this would be not the three pyramids in Egypt, but literally thousands of pyramids all over the world, pyramids on other planets. This would be crop circles, cryptozoology. I happen to be an experiencer of Bigfoot, actually. and also just all of that stuff. And I have, you know, all these people who found their way to us. And so, yeah, our history, you got a really good dose of like a conversation Brett and I would have any given day about the hidden history that we're rediscovering way before Sumeria. And also all the way up to, you guys were talking about Nazis and how there was a, you know, distortion of our current history. We have a history that really happens and a history we all agree to. So, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Well, that, I mean, the history is, to me, probably one of the most important things, because the history is a part of our consciousness. If we don't know our history, we don't know who we are, and if we don't know who we are, we can be anybody and we can be molded into being everybody. So and this is why there's been a systematic genocide, not only of people but of ideas and traditions, which is you know, it's that's gone on ever since these buggers have been here. So I want some names. Yeah, we want some names. We want to be able to point some fingers and poke some pitchforks at.
Oh, I love that. That's my favorite thing. Because, you know, basically it's who benefits. There's a Latin phrase for that. Who benefits?
Qui bene or something?
Thank you. Qui bene. Yes. Who benefits? Well, okay, so I'll just give you the quickie thing. I missed being a Roman Catholic by one generation. My mother was raised in that. And they basically, you got to go back and you got to say, okay, there's the Catholic Church. Then you go back, which is, you know, I don't want to pick on Catholics here. What I want to say to religious, you know, kind of speak to the religious...
Not Catholics, there, but the church. But
no, anything religious, kind of the thing that draws you in, I think, for most people is the spirituality they're attracted to trying to find out who they are in spirit. But they get this added layered on, and these, you know, rituals and traditions and all of that, you know, pageantry, really? It's like pageantry. It's a show. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But there's this added hierarchy that they get involved in, and then on top of that is you know, there's the, all the masses and the people who are part of that, but there's this inner circle of almost every religion, almost every mystery group, it could be pagan, whatever. There's this inner circle, and if you go and you look at a pyramid, at the top is the pyramidion. It's the top of the pyramid. Those are all very close together, so all of those things are really almost the same group of thugs that have been, you know, bedeviling us forever. It's the same people, and they have these techniques that they use, and I learned it this way, and I'll just give you a quick background. I'm a contactee. I was hardcore awakened when I was 45 years old when an implant broke in my brain. It was a piezoelectric ping in my brain, and I was able to start integrating all this stuff that I had accumulated in my life, but I was very religious, didn't know what to do with this information that kept coming to me, so I put it in what I call my external hard drive, like a part of my brain that was like a dustpan and just shut the door and don't think about it. Well, then it wasn't really working for me because I was beginning to look around and see some of the things that I talk about now. And I went from having this implant break, this probably esoteric or etheric experience of this thing breaking, because it was like spirit and it was like material. It was like both. And then just whoosh of a you know, like catching up to where I was kind of supposed to be if I had not been tampered with, which I believe was before 7 years old. So there's a whole story. I have a whole backstory of being part of the military-industrial-extraterrestrial complex, interfering with American school children right during the era of the Cold War. I was born in 61, so right in that area. So anyway, I began automatic writing in 2009, and I wrote and I wrote. I didn't had no idea what I was even writing about. I was a journaler before that, and it kind of morphed over into this material. And they gave me some wonderful little tools to understand things. And I'll talk about anomalies, but I want to get this whole. What fascinates me is why do we believe the lies? That is what fascinates me. Why did I stay inculcated in something I now don't believe in for all that time? So this is what's the most fascinating thing to me is why do we believe it? And they gave me one term, theatrics. I was telling you about theatrics. And they helped me break the word down. Theatrics. Theo, which means God. Tricks. The tricks of the gods. In other words, perhaps maybe even from our Anunnaki ancestors or some extraterrestrial thing, this is mind software. This is thought form software that resides in our brains, in our mind, in our etheric parts of our mind that gets us all twisted up and tied into a system. And so what happens is you have the Catholic Church, I'm going to pick on them now, with the big pageantry and they have the incense. It's like it's a whole full spectrum experience, the light and the music and the sound and the giant organ and the singing choir boys and the rituals and all this, you know, theatrics that goes on. This is the magic. We all have our energy, our of our attention, and we know from quantum physics how important our observership and our attention is. When we point that at something, we give it energy. I call it our attention engine. So we make that reality a real to us. We make it valid to us. So when we get attracted to some pageantry, we literally give it energy. It's like a vampiric system, and they take that little bit of energy from us. It's so powerful, from all of the masses watching, and they make an entire thought form construct out of it. It's very magical. And so therefore, they set the page for what is real and what is not. These different systems of theatrics, theatrics, political theatrics, all of it, cultural theatrics of sport. And I used to stack magazines for a living, so celebrities. Oprah was killing me. Her magazine's like an inch thick. I had my thumbs aching by the end of the day. it was horrible. And I would amuse
even
my,
in print, she's overweight. Bless her heart.
I know. Well, you know, I would just amuse my coworkers with doing her pose of the month, because every month she poses different. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, so that's a paying attention to the world of celebrity, and the celebrities have replaced our gods. You know, back then, back in the day, kings and queens and princes and dukes and earls and whatever would have been the celebrities, right? They dressed to the nines. They set the court, you know, mannerisms and the fashions and all of that. They were the celebrities back then. Well, we kind of moved into the pseudo-democracy idea where we think we're a democracy. And so now we've replaced that now with celebrity sports figures and celebrities. And I had little old women following me to the cart to get the next, you know, they wanted that People magazine right out of the cart. They wouldn't even wait for me to stack it. It was incredible. They had to know, like the next thing about, you know, Angelina Jolie and Jennifer Aniston, the magical woman who's always pregnant but never pops out a kid. She's always, like on one magazine cover, she's always pregnant. So it's really weird. But it was fun. I learned culturally a lot from that experience. So where it comes into the anomaly thing is people are now like dissatisfied with that consensus reality show primarily because the magic that's going right now on it's not fun right now is austerity. That is sucking literally all of our life energy out of us by taking our wealth, taking our homes, taking our jobs. And, you know, I saw a chart recently. If you see a chart of what the masses get and what the 1% of 1% gets, and it just looks like almost level and kabam, it goes to the moon, you know, this chart. And we're done. We're like, we play Monopoly, the game, and somebody got all the, you know, money, and now we're done. It's like, but they're still playing the game. And as you're seeing the Greece uprising, it's like they're onto it. Or what happened in Iceland, they're onto it. And I just watched a video of a billionaire going, this isn't going to work for us. We can't go buy our fancy cars and be in our planes and be all bling bling. If everybody else is starving, they're going to be angry at us. So now when we look at them, instead of, oh, admiring, look at that great car and all they have, we're all glaring at them. And they're feeling that energy. So it's an interesting time how these dynamics work. And what drew me to anomalies was I already like looked at everything and I go, that's it. You know, as a spiritual person, that's it. And so I was, even though in a religious, raised a particular religious way in a Protestant doctrine in the United States, I was still, you know, secretly, you know, like some kids, you know, I was secretly reading, you know, Charles Fort and looking up UFO stuff and a little bit of Edgar Casey, and I was kind of, that was my rebellion. So there you go.
So that's Earth anomalies, space anomalies. There are more things in heaven and earth. You know, that's good.
Yeah, there
yeah.
you go.
I mean, he did know the thing. So they say it was him. Anyway, everything's in doubt. You know, even the speed of light ain't what it used to be. Anyway,
it's a variable. It's not a constant anymore.
That's right.
That.
And so there's a big story. There's a big puzzle. We're all working on little bits of the puzzle. It seems to be about know thyself. I tell you, it feels like when you've had a blow on the head or you've come out of concussion and slowly, fragment by fragment, your life begins to kind of fall back as if you were watching the film of a mirror breaking backwards as all the fragments reassemble. It's kind of as it can.
Here you go. Good.
And I get the feeling that as a planetary consciousness, that's what's going on, and it's all happening very, very quickly. You know, and people in like, you know, people like the New Agers or people who've been doing Buddhism or the esoteric religious kind of thing, like Sufism or you know all these other inner things, have been practicing for this moment when everything turns inside out. Now, just before the end of the show, I dropped a great bomb, and I just want to pick up on it. If anybody was listening to Studio A, what it was is the idea of pole shift. Everybody thinks about the poles on the Earth being north and south, and you go upside down and all that stuff. But what if it means the polarity, as in your electrical polarity, like on your car? Now, back in the 60s, they used to have cars that were either positive ground or negative ground. Most of the time now, ground is negative, but it doesn't have to be. And the bomb that I dropped is, it doesn't have to be, and this may be part of why the ancient prophecies, the Hopi prophecies tell us that, what was it? That the household things that we use every day will turn around and bite us, or something like that.
Okay, this is really excellent, because I think, I didn't get hit on the head with a hammer, I had a piezoelectric ping in my head, so it was the same effect. But it was interesting after I kind of, like I had a weird, it was like a reading the readme file of a program back in the day. It was like that. Uh-huh. I got a little readme file, and it basically said, it was telling me that this device was making it hard for me to integrate. And I think that's the key, is you hit it on the head, or when you said the mirror is reassembling itself, is because we are fragmented so much now. We're separated within ourselves. We have this fragmentation going on. Again, playing with words, one of the keys for the military industrial complex is compartmentalization.
Yes.
Compartmentalization, where the left hand doesn't know the right foot and the right foot doesn't know the ear. And I mean, it's pretty split up. Now, this is the word play. Come apart, mental ally, I say shun. So how that would work is, let you come here with me, mental ally. We're going to form our little group. We're together. We're of one mind. And we're going to shun these other ones here and not talk to them and be our own group. So this is, we're at the end of that. What do you get when you have compartmentalization? You have our world right now. So these groups were, for negative or positive, holding all these puzzle pieces, like you said, and we're unable to think with the whole collective mind as a result, because we're schizophrenic, you know, sort of like our humanity mind, our cumulus, is now schizophrenically divided, or has a really bad case of multiple personality disorder. And the opposite of that, to reverse that, is integrace gratitude. What that means is you integrate. So when we have a difference, if we talk to people and you know one likes one cola, one likes the other cola, one likes one team, one likes the other team, but we can all agree, like, we love that sport, you know, we find ways to agree together, and we're okay with that person being different than us. That's the grace. Or even wrong. They can be wrong, and still we appreciate who they are as a person. And then gratitude. The gratitude is for the chance to contrast your beliefs, for the chance to share your beliefs. We have very angry people. Listen, I am doing this Earth Anomaly Research Society, and so we're bringing all of these groups that I admin. We bring all these people together, and because of the austerity and the chaos that's happening of beliefs, the crisis of beliefs, we have very angry people in the, you know, the five stages of grief. They're the anger part, and so sometimes I have to, you know, put them in my penalty box and take them out of the group for a while, because they're blowing out on everybody, and it's. The anger is that frustration that we're having with trying to figure out who we are. And at the level, you said it well, at the base level is, who am I? Who are we? We're divorced from who we are. We're reversed from who we are. Here we are, multidimensional, magnificent beings of light, getting squished down into a human iteration, in a human body, having human experiences. And in that squishing part is... We were holistic, we were all these things, and then we have to kind of forget who we are, and then get stuffed into this little body here, and we don't know who we are. And reflected back to us is all this stuff that you try for a while, religion or politics or booze, whatever, and you go, wait a minute, you say, oh yeah, that's me, I'm going to do that for a while. And then you go, you find out it's got consequences and issues, so ooh, that's not me, okay? So we're bouncing around all these different little, you know, pubs, these pubs in the town, and finding out what's working for us and what isn't. But really, ultimately, ultimately what that reversal, like talking about reversal, like a pole shift, it's a, you know, I feel like the world is upside down and backwards to me. For instance, I have three children. My youngest child is severely disabled. And the way that disabled people are treated, the way we value, like, someone gets a lot of money because they're beautiful, rich, and, you know, they're our gods. We worship them, right? They're our, what stand for gods now. And other people, disabled, homeless, whatever, we just say, we don't give that any regard as to why, you know, why is there homelessness at all? I mean, that's a whole manipulation right there of housing to make it some kind of privilege instead of a basic need. And it is a basic need. And so our valuation is backwards. We're forgetting that everybody deserves to be in the tribe. Everybody deserves to be taken care of. That was our values in our tribal days, you know, in our families. And then something else enters in, the monetary magic, the Babylonian money magic enters in, and suddenly it's okay for you to be stepping over somebody's sleep body on the street. What is that? And then we shower these people on the cover of magazines with millions of dollars. I think I stacked the magazine for Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt when they had their twins. And I think I heard somewhere that they were given something like $5 million or $4 million. Oh, it might have been $10 million just to do the cover spread and the interior article. And I was like, oh, that just boggled my brain a lot when I would read, you know, kind of what that was going on culturally. And that's our values are now. Why are our values this way? This isn't natural or normal to humans when they really think about it, or humans the way they used to be. One thing I've observed is that we have a part of our brain, I believe it's the corpus callosum. So when we look at a human face, we're a baby looking at our mother's face. That's how we bond. That's the we, you know, I'm me, but that's the we part of our brain. That's of our socialization. What do we have in that space now? We have the television, we have video games, we have computers, we have something other than a human face in that space now, to the extent where the we becomes the consensus reality show. So there's these tricks, the tricks of the gods to do all of this, to manipulate things in such a way that they create this energetic pyramid that they sit on top of. Now, you said chaos. I love that. I think we're going through a period of space, like maybe the whole solar system is going through a period of space where it's as it begins to switch polarities, maybe, it breaks. Everything's breaking down perfectly. Falling apart perfectly. It's hard to be a human existing in that, but it's really hard to hold an energetic construct of the negative kind also. So now all of a sudden we know who these people are. My father was a conspiracy theorist back in the day. I grew up in a conspiracy theorist household, heard all Bilderberger, Illuminati, all of that, Federal Reserve System as a young child. Now, I never heard people talking about that. Now you see it everywhere. You see it all over the internet. You hear people talking about it. What's that? That's amazing to me. That's this beginning to break down those systems, and it's coming from our hearts where we're saying, this is not me. This isn't what I value. People are reassessing. So good illustrations that you had. Thank you.
So, and it's interesting, you're talking about negativity and a negative ground. And how the polarity is shifting. I think we're onto something here, Watson. You know, the idea, because, you know, if you grew up with that, you know, I couldn't say that I'm an old hand at this. I was Britain's Millennium Man. That's kind of what got me into it, because I saw that I was being interviewed on this TV show. And they were asking me questions that didn't allow me to answer in my true creative form. They were rallying the answer. They were, you know, corralling the answer out of me that they wanted me to say. They just wanted me to speak their script. And at that point, I thought, there's something wrong here. I used to believe the news. And that was my red pill. And when was that? Well, that was 2000. That was about the same time that The Matrix went out. So I always feel that I'm on the same journey as a lot of people. And what happens to me is what's happening to everybody else. And the ideas that come to me, therefore, are the ideas that are coming to everybody else. And that I shouldn't be surprised if I hear these ideas around me. It's more the other way around. I am surprised to hear them coming back, but I'm very pleased when I hear people talking about it. But, you know, there are so many the pitfalls along the way, because the dark side takes the realizations that we've made, and then commercializes it. They make a movie from it or something that twists the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, basically they make the okay, so here's another concept I learned. A mathematical concept is absolute value. Okay, so an absolute value in math is if you put the number 5 between two upright bars, it can mean negative 5 and it can mean positive 5, right? It could be either 1 because it's the absolute value of 5. And here's the deal. Let's suppose we really, really love something. And then we get disheartened by it. And then we really, really hate it to the same extent. Oh, this happens in relationships, right? To the same extent that we were really happy with that thing, we're now really not happy with that thing. Either way, what they've learned to do, part of the magic, is they get the absolute value of the energy, because you're still got your attention and engine pointed there. Now you hate it. Now you were over on this team over here, this political side, the left, and you were all about it. Then you get disheartened for some reason. So now you go over to the right, and you're hating those guys. And it's now bouncing back. The energy's bouncing back between the two, and it's creating this friction, which makes heat, the energy. The thing is to really move beyond that is the beautiful third way, right? We hear that in certain philosophies, is to just walk away from it. Don't get it energy one way or the other. So oftentimes, if a collective, a controlling collective is really smart, they're going to make the poison and the pill. They're going to make both sides, because they're going to do adversary creation, and they're going to do both sides so they can keep that energy going. Love me or hate me. Oh, hey, it was a British gal, Lady Sovereign. She's a rapper. That her tagline was, love me or hate me, still an obsession. I love that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you're still obsessed. You're still giving it energy. And so it takes a while to go through realizing that part of it, is that you're still giving this attention system some, you know, validity for yourself and participating. And then, you know, there's a realization, or there can come a realization not to participate in either side, to go look at something else. I'm working in the anomaly energy because I know that we need to go look at something else. But first we got to see what we're not able to see normally. And here's that normally is a great word, because an anomaly is they make a system, then they throw over this pile of stuff at the side that doesn't fit, and that's the anomalies. And I say if you take the whole thing all together, that's still manifest reality. It is a part of reality whether you like it or not. A crop circle is a part of reality. If someone witnesses it, of course, it's part of a giant skeleton that they find, or the Bosnian pyramid. It's there. It's in our manifest reality whether you like it or not. You can't stick it over in the anomaly pile unless you're trying to have a system of control. So I call all of that all normally. So I try to clue people in that if it's there, it's part of normal. It's all normally. It's manifest in your whole system. And you have to come to terms with it some way or another. And then that's the quest, right? The quest. The question. You've got a question in your head. It's the quest I own. My quest. I want to find out more about that. If somebody comes along and makes you say what you're believing right now, give me your answer right now. I want your answer. It's and swear. I attest that I swear that this is so. The answers doesn't help us. Like Socratic, you know, questioning Socrates. It's better questions that keeps your quest going. And you go deeper and deeper and deeper to whatever level helps you reach your peace, right? Helps you understand things and helps you have your peace about it and continue or not, depending on what you're looking at.
The question, the journey. So what was your question?
Well, my question was kind of based on the fact that I was relatively rigorous religion. I went to the religion school. I lived the religion. And I began to have more and more questions. And the key for me was I am a psychic person. And I'm psychic in the area of being a contactee. So I'm always having this information coming in. I began to realize it was coming from what I could identify as I am awarenesses or intelligences. And that scared me to death because in most religious the systems, you know, you're supposed to be praying to your saints or your gods or your God or your, you know, Holy Spirit, whatever. You're not supposed to pay attention to ghosts, ancestors, aliens. You know, that's demonic or of the devil or whatever. So I'm having that. That's my crucible right there, is that I have this, you know, really innate ability to do this naturally, very easily. And I'm getting the information from them. They're kind enough to not present too many faces to me right at first. The first beings I identify with is on my Native American side. I'm Native American Cherokee from my father's side, and that's really where I touched my ancestors, when I began to talk to ancestors from that side, because in the family history, our branch of the family was able to quote-unquote pass for a white. In other words, they didn't have to live on the reservation. They went and got jobs and farms and land and lived a non-native life, although they, you know, that was kind of a thing. So my grandmother was and my grandfather were sharecroppers in Arkansas, and that's where my dad came from. But he was very intelligent, and he went to school at college, and he became a type of engineer. So, you know, this, but he had a very materialistic view. Like, if you see something psychic like that, it's your imagination. That would be his space. My mother, on the other hand, was Irish. Our people came over from Ireland during the second potato famine. We came from County Cork and ended up in West Virginia. And now my late women's side of the family, we have, you know, we're constantly manifesting psychic behavior, and we just laughed about it and called it our Irish. You know, our Irish is really up right now, and that was kind of permissible under the, you know, belief system to just have that, but it was played down considerably. And as I walk through my journey of my life, this is just more and more and more build up of this capacity. Now, I'm not a tea leaf reader or a palm reader or anything useful, like you're going to meet a tarot or what lottery numbers you should play, or you're going to meet some your love of your life or that. I have a totally different information base. What would happen is whatever I was paying attention with, I would just get more information. I would just pop into my head. And this happens to me all the time. And it's particularly useful now that we have Google, because I can Google, I get keywords. Basically, I'm looking at a story or idea, bam, keywords come into my head. I type them in, and it means something. And then the other side of it, I seem to be weirdly wired to the planetary situation. Probably growing up in my home, where we talked about the overall politics of the world, you know, the commies and the Illuminati and all those things, made me acutely aware of the geopolitical hierarchy, what was up with that. And it was kind of dismal. It's kind of like they win, you lose, we know, there you go. It wasn't presented well. It was kind of like, okay, that's the way it is, and there's nothing you could do about it. You know, we know about it, it's good to know about it, but we can't do anything about it. That was very depressing. I was a depressed child because of that, particularly a teenager. And at a certain point, I had a friend of the relative say, you know, you're probably not going to get to grow up, and diving under the tables because of the bomb. I mean, it's just dismal. And I was like, hey, I want to grow up and have a life. I honestly, most of my years, did not expect to be as old as I am now and be a grandmother. And the thing was I finally had to go, wait a minute, there's the other forces at play that keeps the bad guys busy just as much as the good people. There's a balance. There's something going on, and I wanted to know what was that. And that was my quest.
Wow. So there was something going on, and you had to find out because it was burning a hole Oh, yes.
Can you hear me now?
No. I can hear you. I've heard you all the time. You just didn't hear me because I was muted. Anyway, there you were. So I just had said a whole load of interesting things, and then, of course, I was muted, so you didn't hear me. Sorry, that completely froze my brain, that bit of silence. The knowledge that you got back, and I've been thinking, like, okay, what was in that bit of silence that she was there, and my flow is completely gone. So let's go back. You were talking about your question, right? So let's just...
Yeah, my quest. You asked my quest.
Yes, your quest.
So there's my quest. Always looking, what is the... going on behind the scenes. So you have I was in theater, and you have the stage, and there's the play. What's going on behind the scenes? What's behind the big curtain that all the actors and the players are running around and portraying who they are on that? What's behind that? Why does this manifest this way? And in a sense, why is it backwards? Why is it backwards to me? The values... everything seemed backwards to me. And so if we're having that big shift, and maybe so, we seem to be in an acceleration toward that. The actual magnetics of the planet is actually moving. People don't realize that. They've had to repaint, airplane runways because of the change in the electromagnetic poles. They are shifting and they are moving.
That's right.
So energetically... what does that do to us? You know, what we can see in studying history, these cycles and these flows where the majority belief system was experiencing one kind of thing, a golden age, enlightenment, wonderful capacity, and then other ages where everything's falling apart and there's war and, sort of those, something in our consciousness is in that flow. And in that cycle, and we're caught up in the middle, playing our little part as a human, ostensibly learning something. I think I try to sort out what are my beliefs now. You know, it's not easy. In my world, I can have ghosts, I can have aliens. I'm an admin for a group called Free Experiencers, which is it's a new organization, the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, or FREE, and people want to check that out, go into Facebook and look for Free Experiencers, and this is really fun because people are coming, I guess, out of the closet about their contactee experiences and about their abductions and all of those things, and coming together in that group to discuss them. There's a group of scientists who are themselves experiencers associated with the group. So it's kind of a thing where all of the anomalies are becoming all normalies, at least to people in the quest of consciousness, I believe, who've had the bonk on the head and are waking up. That is of influence, I believe, to the rest of the collective, whether they like it or not. We have this morphogenetic field, and all our thought is influencing each other. And maybe it's the 100th monkey effect. If there's 3% of us or 10% of us that move that way, it's like all those birds will all suddenly fly that direction, you know? And it's we need to change which way we're flying because we're... we're seeing the degradation of the environment and lots of things that results we don't like, and so now we're going, oh, we went that way, that wasn't so great, let's go over here. I hope so. Do you think so?
So let's look at the way that we ended up last night, Brett. Who's your partner? Is it, can I say your partner, your husband? Sorry, I'm...
No, he's my partner. We've been together since about a year and a half ago. We were friends before that, and we lived together, and we researched together. So partner is even reality of our work.
All right. So business and romantic as well.
Yes.
Excellent. So, and this is part of the way of the future, you know, that the couples who work as teams, and as in the old way. This is an Atlantean thing, wasn't it? That they used to have pairs who would work as a team, male and female, because of our polarity. And here we go, back to polarity. So what are we getting? We're seeing a polarity shift. We're seeing the pole of, you know, we're talking about magnetic pole shift, but magnetic is the opposite of electric, or the counterpart. So there's potentially, again, I laugh at my own stupid geek humor, but potentially there's the idea that what we stand on, our ground, will become positively instead of negatively charged. And that is the other kind of pole shift, literally the electrical pole shift. And nobody's spoken about that. And it just came to me the other day, because I'm assembling this lighting system for my house, and I'm thinking, all right, well, it'd be much easier if I just tied everything to the ground. And in my head, I'm saying, no, ground lift, sir. I didn't say sir. Ground lift, I'm getting. Because like you were saying, you know, you get these words. It's just like bloody kosh in Babylon 5. Were you a Babylon 5 fan?
No, I was a huge Star Trek fan. I had Spock ears, and I went to the conventions. That was my thing. And then I graduated from fiction into finding out what was behind the fiction when I found out Gene Roddenberry and Lucas and all these guys were actually talking about real things. But I watched it on and off a little bit. I thought it was very interesting, every show that I saw. And that was the thing with science fiction. It's a wonderful way to get all this stuff in an environment to discuss these things when our society isn't ready yet. So go ahead and go from there.
Yeah, well, anyway, so Kosh was this character who was a light-bodied being, kind of. And but what you call an angel. He's got wings and everything, and he looks different to everybody. So there's a kind of mind manipulation thing going on. But one of the characteristics was that they would say like one word, like, and it would be like 1,000 people all coming together just to say one word, and you hear those different voices, so it's like a kind of collective voice thing. And that's the kind of communications that I've been getting. So when you were talking earlier that you get, you know, you would hear in your readme file, I like that, when you did a healing, that you would get this readme file, that, and then it would contain just the odd word, just a single word. And I receive things like that as well, and they do seem to be like those words are just, they're succinct, they describe everything. Even if they think they're saying one thing, you'll come back a couple of years later and say, oh my god, that had several meanings.
Yeah, like, well, on our computers, we have a file name, right? So we get, you know, people talk about getting a download, and you'll get a word, and it will just, you realize that behind that, there's a lot, you know, and it's funny how inconvenient that is, by the way, when it happens. I'm washing dishes, and there it is. So what would happen is I would explore that word or term or phrase, and one that came to me, I'll explain, was a phrase, the water speaks. And I felt when that went in my head that there was a lot to that. And at the particular time, I was working with a local organization to save an artesian well. An artesian well that was from 90 feet down below the surface was an artesian well that the pressure would push it up through a pipe. And the water that would come out would have been water that had been filtered for maybe 50 years. And it was it was actually a living water, so it had an effect on your system and your body and your pineal gland that I kind of knew or learned about. And that was it. Was the water speaks. I wasn't supposed to open that file yet. Well, what happened was I was involved in a project where I began to learn so much about water, and a miraculous thing happened. I actually got to meet in person Dr. Emoto, who was a gentleman who experimented with the states of water where it was not cohesive. You said hateful things, or you put hateful energy toward this jar of water, and then you would speak loving things to this other jar of water, and then you'd make ice out of it, and the one ice crystals would be incohesive and blobby looking, and the other ice crystals would be these beautiful, cohesive, cymatic, gorgeous patterns. And so that was one of those things that you're talking about, where I got the sprays, and over time, still, I'm learning that water, I lived on a boat, and so I had amazing meditational experiences over the boat. I got most of my major contact stuff eased into my life because I'm over the water, and it kind of offsets the electromagnetic soup that we're in when we're normally under power lines and in our homes and everything. And I didn't realize how much of an effect that had on me until I got out over the water. And I was literally much more able to speak to my guides and the beings that I later came in contact with. My whole awakening in that part of my life happened when I was living over water. But it started as that phrase, and it continues as I go along. I learn more. So it's that type of thing. You're absolutely right, and it hits you deep. This isn't like you read a book about it. This hits you so deep in your consciousness that it's just part of you after that. And that's the kind of learning we had as a species. We have that ability in the gnosis or the knowing, and we supplanted that with a hierarchical dissemination of information that we have now. And so we're going back to that, is that now we're realizing how empty and shallow and manipulated that hierarchical system gives us in everything we want to know about. And now people are unhooking from that and hooking into the gnosis again. And the anomaly thing draws them. It drew me because you've been given this reality. It doesn't work. There's these weird things that don't fit. You go pursue your quest of finding out all those anomalies, the earth anomalies, all of the any topic you hit there, whether it's volcanism or crop circles or any of it. The deeper you go, the more there is. It's not just, you know, well, there's debunkers and they'll say, oh, that was, you know, swamp gas there, that UFO. But when you listen to the people that were there at that UFO experience, like Rendlesham Forest, for instance, the more you know about that, the more, it's like it opens up an encyclopedia amount of curiosity to know just that one thing. And right now, I don't watch television generally, but people go, oh, you've got to see the show. So I'll watch a UFO show on television. And it's incredibly shallow. I just had a friend whose case was on a program, on a contactee program. And it's a shadow of its former self. This person is very frustrated because the presentation isn't even close to the experience that this person had. And so that's why it's a personal quest is the best. And what has happened now is, I believe, the internet has got its issues too. You can get really caught up in a lot of things. But it's almost like that technology was given to us as a gift, because now you can personally look, you know, just pull your smartphone out and look something up. You can personally look up all kinds of things and study it, you know, on where you're sitting on the bus. And the other thing that it's done is it's accelerated human knowledge, because the researchers can talk to each other. Back in the day, if you wanted to know something from a researcher, you had to go to the library and get in the card catalog, and you had to ask the librarian at the reference. It was very involved. Now, we can talk to that person. You can contact them by email, or they may even be on Facebook, and you can, you know, the amount of information you can glean from knowing them personally or knowing their work, as it ties together with whatever you're studying, all those bits and pieces are accelerating into becoming one cohesive picture. And the opposite is going. Now we're throwing out the stuff that doesn't fit, which is made up. You know, the reality is all of us are coming to understand through consciousness studies connected to all these events. That is becoming more cohesive, and the made up stuff that kept us or was very shallow or was manipulated is getting thrown out. It's part of our manifest reality, because maybe our friends believe that, but it's not in an active role less and less and less.
So, at this point, we normally get a kind of guitar starting thing, and then there's some music and all sorts of stuff, and shouting, and lots of shouting. Lots of people saying things, speeches, saying do this, do that. So, however, since we're running on basically there's a candle that is held underneath some old timers, and they're running on their treadmills. So please donate so that we can give them cake and cups of tea. as I said, normally we're having a kind of mental and pause moment here. So who knows what's going to happen tonight? Everything's a little bit askew. So that's why I had to play my own jingle at the beginning. Normally it comes on automatically, but anyway.
So. Oh my goodness, you're making me feel real normal in my broadcast life because I seem to be the chaos candidate that comes in. I used to call my kind of people the people with the chaos gene. You know who you are. Strange things happen around you and your normal family members look at you askew. So that seems to be where I fit in the radio world as well. So what you're telling me is you're holding this thing together with spackle and duct tape.
Sellotape and string, yeah, that's right.
So do I keep talking or we talk?
Yeah, well, we could sit here in silence. We could do a meditation. Okay, everybody sit here for 5 minutes. No, they don't like more than a couple of seconds of dead air.
Oh,
then I start getting messages. What's happened to Studio B? There we go. Yeah, please go ahead.
Oh, I talk about anomaly groups and what's going on in that world because it's really fun. I'm an admin on Facebook for 34 groups. Some of them are big, some of them are small, all of them are fun. And maybe I can tell you about those because to me this is watching this fringe area, this people interested in the alternative everything, and anomalies grow as we share with each other. It's so much fun. Occasionally we get obnoxious trolls in there, and I play whack-a-troll, and I have to be the bad guy and be the bouncer. I'm getting really happy about it now because they take too much of my time. And then the other kind of people that I get is debunkers, people who really want to come in there. And I, you know, it says anomaly at the top of the group. It doesn't say scientifically valid proved, you know, it doesn't say that. It says anomaly, and they feel it's their life mission to make sure I know I'm wrong or my people are wrong in the group. So I tend to send the debunkers back into the bunkers. You know, after a while, because it's like they forget this is it's Facebook. Like, how serious is that? And also, we're not trying to prove anything. We're just looking at it and discussing it as people. We're not scientists. Some of them are. We're not trying to prove anything, and that drives them crazy because they think they're trying to have a debate or something. Most of the people are really great. I get in Earth Anomaly group. I get people that are expert on the Baltic Sea anomaly. I love the history, early history stuff. You heard a lot from Brett yesterday about that, and we talk a lot about that, and that's a big one for us, is reconstructing history as we think it is, based on who we are, what we're able to do, what we know, what we like, what sounds and feels right, you know. So we poke around in all of that. So I'll just kind of share some of the groups, if that works. I mentioned the free experience group. So this is a movement to watch, the experiencers movement. What has happened with ufology and with exopolitics and with UFOs and contact, all of that has started out in a professional sense, like ufology. So did the capsule, did the spaceship really crash? Were there alien bodies? You know, were there parts of the craft? And who saw it? And are they credible or not? In other words, were they a first responder, like a policeman or fireman or military person? Or are they a farmer who was drinking that night out of moonshine, you know, his moonshine bottle? You know, that's kind of the genre there. I simplified it considerably. Great people. Some people who are, you know, it's been a managed concept. People would be well to realized that the military was not really happy with people seeing these things. They had to get that under control. So they basically created a genre or a way to manage the information, and to where we're 60 some odd years from Roswell and they don't really know anything for sure. Wow. Okay, thank you. That didn't seem to really pan out, in my opinion. And then also, there's still interesting stuff. I'm not decrying it completely. It's just, can we talk about the aliens or not? You know. And then the other side is the politics, which is a little bit more speculative. So now we can talk about the different beings and the different races that are here. And so that was kind of a next level that's developed, the exopolitics realm. And then, you know, in all of these, the debates rage, you know, because everyone's got a different point of view. Some people have an agenda. Some people have a professional agenda. They've been paid by a military-industrial complex to guide the discussions in a certain way. So along comes the experiencers movement, which came out of all of that, to where if you were an experiencer and you were not a military person, you have a sense of frustration. You feel like you're a bug under a microscope because they're trying to decide, are you credible or not, you know. This is your experience, and it's somewhat traumatic to your worldview, and you're sitting there with that. And so the experiencer movement is, we're saying, hey, I know what I saw. You know what I mean? And we're struggling with that we've been marginalized and ridiculed, and we're struggling with it personally. Hello?
Good, good. Right, we're back. There was I don't know what's hitting us. It actually felt like an energetic wave, and perhaps part of what we were talking about earlier, what you mentioned about the solar system moving into a dirty area of space, as we call it, whereupon a piece of dirt could be the size of planet Earth or bigger.
Well, some people don't want us to talk about this, right? So that's the issue. This happens often with me when I get on this topic. So the basic idea with the experiencers movement is, it's not like a movement like we're arm in arm together, you know, trying to, we're in the very early stages of talking to each other, kind of, you know, sorting out where we are in society, definitely affirming each other's experiences, even if it's really different. And this seems like the last few days I've really been on the idea that the details are important. Like, if you have a story of contact, I saw a UFO in 1979 when I was 18 years old, and over time, like when I first said it, I would leave out details that I now include, and one of them is there seems to be a time anomaly in that experience that I don't completely understand. But there's the small details now. There's enough other cases and information out there for me to pick at the smaller details and enrich my understanding of my own experience. And so this is an interesting part of it, is that people are now able to accept the weird a little bit better for themselves. Like if the alien came through the door, you can say the alien came through the door. If the alien came through the wall, you might say the alien came through the door, that sort of thing, because it's just too weird that it came through the wall. Then people go, oh, really, you know. But interdimensional beings are able to do that. So this is this place where we dig into our own details. I believe the experiencer movement is so much about your quest. It's getting right to the heart of consciousness studies and tying into the quantum hologram, you know, the real matrix, right? This is a different thing. It's under a lot of attack. I'd have to say most of the people I talk to, they've been down the road here, have gone through a lot of personal struggle and attack, and hey, I got knocked off the air, that sort of thing. So I want to tell people about that effort of free experiences. Yeah.
So free experiences on Facebook. Now.
Yes.
So basically, it's like little taps. If you take, you know, tap a tree, and you have a little cup on the tree, and you get a little drop of resin in the cup, and you go around and collect all the resin into a big basket, you end up quite with a lot of resin. Thus, you end up with a body of information that is fluid and moving. Are you familiar with Cliff High and the WebBot project?
Yes, I am. I actually lived in Olympia, Washington, where he resided. We never met, but I was very interested in that. You know, that's that technology taking a picture of the morphogenetic field as represented on the internet. You know, so he was able to use keywords, very unusual keywords. Some of them are funny, to get it to do predictive, you know, model of what was going to be the next thing. So we're sort of foreshadowing our next thing that, that we're going to be concerned about.
Okay, so you'll be familiar with some of the terms that I'm going to be using them.
Yes.
Because what you're talking about on, in terms of Facebook groups, and I'm not sure if these are engineered to happen as a, or it's a byproduct of what happens due to user demand, and I don't think, and whether it may also be a way of mining for certain, you know, data mining, what they use Facebook for. But when you have groups like this, like I say, you know, one tree will produce a tiny amount of resin, but lots of trees, you know, you from a whole forest, you get a good big lump of resin. So, and you know, the resin in this case is kind of solid experience of large numbers of people who agree upon a certain reality. That makes reality real.
Oh, yes.
You see? And that turns sticky solid resin into fiberglass, incredibly strong. So, you know, carbon fiber, etc. So, you've got a tap into several self-organizing collectives there, and the information that must be being distilled out of that, given also your perception matrix from your as you were telling us your story of the things that you've been exposed to, you have a particular perception matrix, or very small perception matrix, let's put it that way.
Could be.
But through that, you'll be gaining quite a good picture of what is going on currently. That's what I'm saying, is basically this is like a living web bot. And I'd like you to speak, I'm going to just ask, can you speak about the fractal omniverse hologram thing? And the whole thing that people, you know, the people say it's a flat earth. No, but it's a hard drive. And if it's a hard drive, what's it running on? Is it running on DOS? Is it like Linux? You know, what kind of operating system are we talking about? Who wrote the programs? And where can I report a bug?
Yes, exactly. I am a Linux user, so I came from the world of computer science. I took 3.5 years of a 4-year program of computer science in college, and I developed a terrible illness and almost didn't make it. And after that, I decided to just do my human thing and have a family and kind of put, you know, and I shared with my first husband for 20 years a computer business. And so I watched the internet and all these things develop. I watched what Microsoft, we worked a lot with Microsoft, the proprietary mindset that they had, and you know, how this all grew up. And I think it's going somewhere. I think information technology is like training wheels of consciousness. I think it's teaching us as we continue to absorb more of the thought forms, because it goes from, you know, the big computers with the wires, and a bug used to actually be an actual bug that would fry itself in the panel and shut down the whole computer. That's the physicality we used to have that created a physicality for algorithms. And then we went all the way through to where we virtualized this. So the algorithms are now command codes in a shared reality that we have, that we put a technology base to, but the actual reality space is now thought. It's like it steps up to where we're now, where we're at with social media, like you said, we create a thought thing. And the early 3D printers, for instance, were really interesting because they were the vat of resin, just like you said. And two laser beams would come and burn the resin or cure the resin in the shape of, let's say they were making they used it for medical purposes. So they would make a reconstruction of a part of the skull. And so what they would do is create, you know, the cheekbone that someone had an accident and they needed a new cheekbone or chin or something like that. They would model it first in a computer that does 3D graphics based on the face of the person. Then they would put that program into this 3D printing system, and these two laser beams would come and heat up the resin, and then a little elevator would push up, and this new body part would come out, and they would make the prosthetic out of this resin that had been cooked. And that was the early 3D printer. And it's fascinating because that's kind of what we do with thought and ideas and mental algorithms. You know, we teach people to do a math problem in their head. Well, it's all going on in their head. It's all going on in their thought form space of their mind. So we're getting closer and closer with their technology and the way we work every day to having this construct that we all work with. We're getting to where thought works in the matrix. And if we graduate from this, we're literally going to have much more of a conscious awareness of how to make the reality the way that we want to. But we have to let go of some ideas that were there before. For instance, I'll go through these groups, the anomaly groups, the Earth anomaly. We're going to need to begin to integrate what does all those anomalies tell us about our history and our past. We've got to start integrating those ideas. I work with Brett, who started the Lunar Anomaly Research Society, and it's been fascinating how people keep looking at lunar photographs that NASA presents to the public and finding all kinds of things that are just not right. Like, why is every NASA photograph have a black background? Couldn't it take pictures of the stars? If you could do a follow-up program with Brett, he has wonderful insights into the exact process of that.
Karen, I'm going to get back. I'm going to get Brett back for more than one program. I mean, we've agreed at least three at the beginning. Yeah. So maybe once a month or something like that. You guys are impressive. Where have you been hiding?
Me? I was a caregiver for 20 years of my adult my daughter, who's now, it's her birthday this week, she'll be 28. I took care of her. She was born with spina bifida. Hello, Irish people. That's an Irish what I found out was anyone born with that disease, it's genetic, coming from County Cork. So the best organizations of research of that disease are in your part of the world. And she and I was doing the caregiving thing. I ended up, because I was good at it, taking care of 8 family members. So that kept me pretty involved. And it was also very mentally boring. I mean, it was routine, I would say. So that would give me my time to study and work out this puzzle in my head. And then I started working in doing admin. That seems to be my knack, to do admin for Facebook groups. And, you know, I would find posts that were interesting to people, and it's grown. I've worked with other teams of admins, and I continue to be added, and I'm saying, hey, no more. I'm full. I got enough. So I started a few. I started, 8 or 9 or 10. And so that's kind of the space I was at. I did a little bit of radio back in 2012, 2013. Then I did some radio this last year, or this year actually, and that was primarily on economic topics. And that's near and dear to my heart too, because that was what I grew up hearing about, the Federal Reserve and all of that, the money system. So I'm now moving back over into the money system thing again, because I think when you talked about fractal, That's the key. We have a fractional reserve system. We take the pie and we divide it up into a little sliver for the poor, a bit bigger for middle class, and a big giant piece for the rich, right? So the system we have is fractional. And then if you have a fractal system, you just simply learn to make more pie, right? That's the fractal comes from the zero point. It's all the way to infinity, right? It's one infinity. So there's no limit. What we have in our mental world right now is the idea of scarcity. That is the number one thing manufactured in the world, the idea of scarcity. So, for instance, you have California, the state of California where I was born, and they're having a massive water shortage right now. And I was pretty young. My dad worked in the engineering thing to hear about desalination plants. They have a freaking ocean all the way down one side of the state. And yet they never invested in desalination plants. If they would have done so, they would have had the water that they need now. I also am aware of very high-level evaporator systems that can produce 50 gallons of water a day, where you just get it out of the humidity of the air, you know, the ocean mist there in California. What they've done is they've gone the opposite way. They've gone to systems that create a scarcity, and they never repaired the infrastructure of how our city water systems, again, I learned this from the Artesian Well Project, to where our water tastes crappy. So we all buy bottled water, and who does that benefit? It benefits the water companies that now can sell us water in a bottle that's now valued as a commodity almost higher than oil, a gallon of oil is, or a barrel of oil is. So you see how that way we processed how we do stuff put us into manufactured scarcity, where we could have worked with how nature does things. All of our systems could be more natural and closer to the way nature does things, and we could have abundance. But the glitch is in our minds, in our collective minds. There's the glitch. That's what fascinates me, is how do we unglitch that? And it's absolutely a function of consciousness, because everything is a function of consciousness. We have the quantum hologram is the in that example of the 3D printer, it's making that part. That's the quantum hologram is I'm going to manifest that of third dimensional object. But the vat of resin, like I love you talking about that, that's the medium, and that medium is thought. It's consciousness.
So, that's a fascinating idea, that 3D printer thing of seeing. I just keep seeing like a head kind of growing out of this vat of resin and then starting to speak to you, you know.
like something really. You're coming out of a vat.
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, it's like going backwards from being molten, you know. So, right, okay, so Studio B is down, but we're still in running on Wolf Spirit Radio. Hang on a second, what's happening here? We have a caller, Australian Paul, hello.
Good afternoon, morning and evening.
Hello, how are you doing? I understand that Studio B has died because of a generator problem. The communications for once are quite good today, even though the S seems to be hitting the F quite a lot on various levels. So would you like to ask our guest the question?
Well, actually, I was just listening in until we dropped out, and I was trying to catch back up because I actually was getting into the convo. And then I had to go revert back to Studio A, and that just totally threw me off. I'm very sorry. So just keep talking, and I'll just be listening, and I've got a good question, but I absolutely forgot it.
Right. Well, could you mute your mic until until we can
definitely
bring you back? Put something in the chat room if you've got when it comes back to you, okay? Because Karen's got a lot to share. So, Karen, Where were we? So there's all these groups, and we were talking about how the holographic universe and many people have been talking about the flat Earth, which I mustn't talk about, but the holographic universe runs on a computer somewhere, or a network of computers somewhere. Is nothing real? Where in what dimension is the computer a real thing? And is it all? I'm just going to ask you loads of questions and see where it gets you. Is it all that it's all software? That even all the dimensions are software, and they're just like levels of a game, and that somehow we've gotten trapped in this game, and we're just sitting there with goggles on.
Good. Great question. Okay, so I'm going to throw in an information group that is coming out. We've been quietly talking to each other, and we came out together on another program I won't mention, but I was involved in the latter days of a group called the Life Physics Group. My contact for that was a gentleman by the name of A.R. Borden, and he had various groups. One of them was an online forum, and there I met some tremendously amazingly talented and good thinker people. And I have been trying to, it was the information that they studied, this group for about 30 years, the Life Physics Group, is they took some physicists who were pretty open-minded, but they still didn't share their real names, and they took a group of intuitive empaths, and they began to do experimentations to try to discover exactly what you're talking about. What's the construct of this thing? And they developed something called the working model. And it's instead of, let's see, we have a universe, and then we have galaxies, and then we have solar systems, and we have planets, and then we have moons, like that sort of materialistic idea for what our reality construct was it was like an egg within an egg within an egg of consciousness, and the very last level on the outside is just pure potential. So you come into pure potential to something called the T boundary, the beginning of thought. Where thoughts begin to form. And the term they gave us from this study was ideomaterial. So a great way to discuss ideo, which is idea, and material, which is stuff, is to look at a Disney show. If you were watching, I enormously love Shrek, the ogre. He's awesome. And he is manifested in our, we're watching him on a movie, or in a video game my kids used to play, and basically he is a construct. So he's all of his clothing and his movements and how he runs and his big funny green face, all of that is programmed into a computer and rendered, and then they put Shrek inside his environment, which he tends to run around in the forest quite a bit. So he's in his forest. So that's the environment that he's put in. And when he's moving around, there's sort of a center point of who he is. Just the kind of the little dot that they, if it goes to the right, they move it to the right. And if it goes to the left, they just move the dot around, and all of his whole lumbery body will move in his lumbery kind of way, that back and forth. He's an idea, right? He's an idea of code. And he's in a material, imaginary material universe. So there's a whole environment that he's in, which is the materiality of the environment that exists that they built also out of code. So this is what we're trying to understand, is exactly what is it. I think at some level it's consciousness within consciousness within consciousness. So for instance, if I go to sleep at night, my house doesn't disappear. The kind of that existential question, you know. If a man talks to a woman and she doesn't hear him, does he exist? So that kind of thing. Is it a human level, or does the fractal level really mean all of these different energetic layers in the layer cake that we pass from, being spirit? We, the spiritual study is of us, the spiritual traditions we have, whatever they are, indicate we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So somewhere we're energetic beings, where I am awarenesses that come down for whatever level of manifestation that we are, and we manifest here. And there's kind of some rules. You kind of have to come out of Imani, you know. There's some rules. You have to maybe go through the veil of forgetfulness, otherwise you're going to know too much for your own good. All of these things. We have some kind of ground rules in this game or construct. And so the interesting part about right now is we're at the, I hope, end of a tremendously materialistic experiment. Even our religions are very materialistic. The biggest churches and organizations are wealthy, you know, and they have lots of property, and they build big buildings for you to go in, and they have all of the materialism. And they tend to, if you're of that religion, you'll help the other guy of that religion, and you guys will have, help each other. That will be your tribe. That will be how you materialistically trade. You would rather trade with someone of your tribe that way, your religious tribe, than the opposite. So if being, really whatever here, it's like if you're Catholic, you're not necessarily going to trade with a Muslim person, although you might. It depends on if you feel that you trust them in some way. But you can deal with a lot of trust issues by being in the same sort of religion tribe. And so you'll marry within your religion. Politics and other parts of our society plays the same thing. The familiarity that's brought by being in a group. So, yeah, it's we're at this point, though, where that's a fragmentation of resources. It's now, like, banked away from the people. And now the snake eating its tail, is run out of tail, and we're at this stalled out point because it's not working for everybody this way. And also the materialism, constantly having consumable stuff that we throw away and put in a big pile somewhere underground. The kind of the waste of consumable stuff instead of sustainable stuff. So basically what's going on is we've done an experiment, we see the results, it doesn't work for everybody, now what? And that now what thing is going to work itself out in this shared reality bubble, our cumulus of thought, our morphogenetic field, our biokind, biomind, all these terms I've been throwing at you come from this life physics group study. And the group that I'm working with is going to bring more and more and more of this material out. It's very fascinating. Our progenitor, A.R. Borden, passed away in 2013, and we're still together talking about this because of how compelling it was. And all of these other groups studying the quantum hologram are proud to be part of Dr. Edgar Mitchell's free group. He put his name on that just a few weeks ago. Proud to have him because he started the Noetic Studies Institute. So this is what we're all doing this puzzle together.
There's thank you. There's a sort of a point coming from Wall Street Radio's chat room from Pup. She's saying, I'm no longer convinced that we forget life-to-life information because we can't handle it. It seems the idea that it serves someone else's agenda makes a lot of sense. The idea that we lose our memories so that we start again from zero. Are you with groups that discuss that sort of thing?
Well, this is interesting because I actually write poetry, and I did an entire short poetry book exploring kind of what that's about, because it just kind of flowed. It was an automatic writing project, and I've published that book as a free ebook because I really learned from it. And it's not so much that we're forgetting because where, you know, if you've ever seen a little newborn baby, they actually, to me, look like a bit of an amnesiac. It looks like that just before they popped out, they got hit in between the head with a ball peen hammer. They're just kind of blank, you know, to me. But what is going on is it's not so much, like, what I learned from the download, what I learned was, it's not so much that we're forgetting everything in order to be, treated as slaves, although that's a side effect, you know, because we don't know anything and we only know what we're told. It's the idea that we're so expansive, okay, that if we brought everything in there with us, it wouldn't work to be in these lower or more limited material, spiritual, idiomaterial bodies in this environment. It's like if I want to hear, I have an orchestra and I just want to hear the piccolo part. I don't want to hear the whole, like, orchestra just yet. I just want to hear that one thing. And a nice poetic phrase that came out was, we're trying to pick out the rattle of one leaf on a tree in a storm. Well, we're not going to be able to do that unless we are the leaf. Then we'll know, we'll hear that, we'll experience that. This is how Source, it says in the book, this is how Source energy, the grand, great intelligence, is learning about itself by playing all of these parts. So I am, if I could define my spirituality where I'm at personally, is I am an expression of Source, living out what I'm living and experiencing what I'm experiencing, because it's unique. It's a unique thing, the life that I have led. And I have a sense of some of my other past lives, that even some what I call Y-line lives. So, like, we have our timeline X, and adjacent to us is parallel lives. I have some dreams and memories of parallel lives adjacent to the one I'm on right now, which is an odd part of my human experience. But and a little bit of sense of my future life, of kind of where I'm going as I learn more. But it hasn't been helpful always to my everyday life, and I try to get a balance in my own life between exploring that and then just making a really good bowl of, you know, pot of soup, you know, like a, you know, I believe it was a Buddhism statement. It was like you pray and then you sweep the floor and then you reach enlightenment and then you sweep the floor. You know, it's integrating that real grand scheme of things and even our dark aspects and just getting down to that one life in human iteration. But here in this phase that I feel is coming next, is everything I'm talking about is we've gone out to all the edges of fractalizing or fractionalizing our human joint experience. And now we're talking about couples and relationships. Until Brett, I've had very difficult relationships because of the energy of competition and competition for resources as we go into austerity. It puts a huge strain on younger people. They can't even formulate a household. And middle-aged and older people or middle-aged people can't keep one because we put everything in the money basket, and now we're fighting with each other for the resources, and we're coming from all these diverse backgrounds trying to see each other, and it's fraught with a lot of friction. I feel fortunate to the universe forever for this phase in my life where I find someone who we are locked into the idea we want to be a representative of the divine feminine and the divine masculine in a very accepting and loving way and be able to do what we do. But believe me, it was a hard road for both of us. So we're in that fortunate phase right now that I'm so grateful that the universe gave me, or we gave ourselves. I don't know. So anyway, yeah. So that's, I was much more pessimistic as a young person than I am now. I'm way more optimistic than I used to be because I think we're going to get this, because we're probably not going to have a choice, because the system is, the big machine is kind of clicking and popping and springs are flying out of it and it's smoking and it's grinding to a halt. And now we're going to be back to us in nature, the way we've been from the beginning, more. We're aware of it now. our human nature as well.
So lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, I found a...
Oh, there you are. Hello. Go ahead.
G'day, how are you, Jackie? But some fantastic statements she said was bringing together and getting back to old school. I found that actually uplifting in the whole lot, especially when the part she was talking about her husband and self, and they're trying to realise exactly where they are at this point in time. And, yeah, it's so funny. One more statement that she said was... about everyone who are totally different trying to get along, which is fantastic. That's what we're all here for, and we're trying to do that. Out.
That's right. Thank you. Any response to that, Karen?
It's entirely possible that we're here to have conflict as well. In other words, it's not out of the realm of possibility that that's part of the human experience. At this stage, though, I think if you're incarnated right now, you're part of the realization, the big wake up and realization that what we've been doing for many generations, you know, it's not too many generations back that we're tribal. This is a really modern experiment. There was a time when we had a tribal, and it was, you know, there was wars and fighting. I'm not saying it was perfect, but our orientation to nature was quite different. This is an interesting phase right now. That's relatively a new experiment, and we decided to do this for whatever reason collectively, and it includes uniting of opposites. It includes a real stark loneliness. I think one of the things that makes me feel sad about this time of period is how incredibly lonely people feel. You can feel lonely in a crowd of people. You can feel lonely in a family. You can feel lonely in a relationship because everyone's kind of separating. The separation is at its extreme level. And so the part of kind of knowing who you are will mean that you'll unite with yourself and you'll unite with Source. And that's the first integration. Who are you? Who am I? And be good with yourself. And then you can go out amongst the others and find your kind. Find your tribe.
Sorry about that. I had to cut him off because he'd not muted himself. One of the things that I wanted to say is you and I are about exactly the same age. I was born in 61 in March, and it's quite interesting and remarkable to hear your kind of sort of parallel life. And this is much as I've been talking about earlier, is that I feel that I'm going through some things that I used to think that I was alone, but there's hundreds of thousands of people that are going through the same thing. And that's what I believe that you're seeing too. And we're the generation that observes the future into its beingness, I believe. Because if you take everybody's lessons in cosmic construction, the cosmic reality by Nancy is reality is what you think it is, you know, or, you know, we are what we make it. We create these. We create reality. And because we've been fed our operating system, our, you know, it's like having a Macintosh or a Windows. We've been fed a specific mindset that causes us not to think outside of that mindset, which is where our freedom lies. And, you know, it could be an operating system these days. It could have been a religion in old days. It could be a tribe in older days. It's, you know, we're safe inside boxes. You know, it's like kids are happy inside a little box. I used to always build little boxes. My kid was always get inside it. And they loved it. Cats do it as well. We like being in boxes, but we also like to be able to step outside of the box occasionally when we feel safe enough. So, what I see you as discovering, you're creating a map or at least a kind of almost like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the new freedom. I think I can see that there's a large. So, how do people get in touch with you? How do people find out? Do you publish these streams of? I mean, apart from doing radio interviews like this, is there any other outlet for the distillation of the resin, as it were?
Well, I am beginning to write and publish because I, coming from where I was in my life before I came to be with Brett, I was not in a good situation for my life. It was very stressful. I had 3 family members I was taking care of in Washington State, and I hit the wall mentally and physically. So when I got here, about a year ago, February of last year, I had a breakdown, literally, because I was didn't know how to not care for people like that. You know, this is a common thing with caregivers. So I had my writings were with me. I brought my writings. They're more important to me as ideas. And I wrote, Brett and I worked on a book called Paradimensional Space Art, which is more his story. I did just publish my poetry book. Is a free ebook. It's if people want to find it, it's tinytiny.url/thoughtequals, and you can donate to that, or you can just put your email in there and get it as a free PDF. And I, you know, this is the unfoldment for me is what am I going to do next? And one factor in my life is due to the work that I did, I injured my hands, so I can't type like I used to. So in thinking of what's next for me, it's audio and radio. I am finishing up a few book projects for other people, and I will do a little bit more for myself. But I see myself in the future continuing to work with the anomaly groups, but getting into media and audio in particular, because that's always the one, like, I love to listen to radio shows like yours and to audios from the past, and just close my eyes and listen. That's my best way to really imbibe things. So I will be actually taking that book and making it an audio book. I believe that I can convey a lot of frequency in that book if I do so. So that will be my... I found out there's a whole genre of audiobook that was never typed. It's popular. I love that. So it's like, I'll just do that. I'll just have some notes, and I'll just speak and make an audiobook out of it. I hope I do some projects like that. So it's like, how do I output? Because I'm sorting this out for myself. I'm on my own quest. At first, I'm just doing a service job. I'm doing this admin thing to help groups get together. Further ones I've been involved with are Exopolitics Mars, Exopolitics World Network. The Writings of A.R. Borden is a smaller group that talks about those life physics principles, and that's going to be in tandem with other people. We're all coming out with our stories of our self-discovery as our human capacity. That's where life physics, it's life physics, it's the physics of life. How every single biokind in nature, a flower, rock, planet, it all has its own bio-mind, and we're all interacting with, in tandem with intelligence that are not just human, but it's nature, it's the cosmos, the planets are Gaia, you know, is a being, you know, that we're, you know, I call her the hostess with the mostess, you know, she's our hostess. And there's the ancient ways would talk about how the stars and the planets and the moon were all beings. They had a consciousness. So that's a good group. I have automatic writing, so you can go to Facebook, look up automatic writing. There's people, that's a wonderful way if you're trepidatious about, you know, what you're meditating on. That helped me so much because I would kind of get it, download it, write it, you know, kind of in a frenzy. My hand didn't like automatically move. I would just like hear a word, write the word, write the word, write the word. And then at the end, I would read to see if it made any sense. And I got this beautiful cohesive stuff. I seem to be kind of good at drawing down something, some contact base. I believe it's a group of beings working with me to understand many things. And so I, you know, I put that at this, the poetry book was kind of small and a good project to learn, you know, book poetry with. So it's on gumroad.com. You'll find that link, will take you there. We have a whole change also in our media, don't we? I mean, we've had a professional media. It's all decided. You talk about boxes. It's slots and boxes of programs and whatnot. It's a little hard for alternative people to jump into. For some reason, when you said boxes, I thought of a cereal box, and I don't believe that I got out of it. I think I was dumped out of it. And now I'm reading the ingredients list and going, wow, I really didn't want that. Okay, so that's kind of the feeling I have about boxes. And that's belief systems. We do kind of have to have our map is our belief systems. In the past, they tended to be kind of rigid because we had the, you know, royal we, like the queen says we, you know, we in our church or we in our politics, we all believe this, right? You know, yes, we believe this. Well, that's kind of rigid and structured, and it's like what, like in the United States, we have Hamburger Helper. So you get a pound of hamburger, and you buy this box of Hamburger Helper, and you cook it up, and you, voila, there's dinner. Or you could actually learn to cook from scratch, you know. It's like, I cook from scratch. So it's kind of like you could do it that way, where it's prepared for you already, and the spices that are little individual packets, and the noodles are, you know, just exactly the right portions, and there you go. Or you can, you know, come out of that box world and learn to decide how the ingredients fit together. It's much more fluid belief systems. So if you kind of can think, like, some ideas to think about when you're world gets blown apart in a sense of belief systems is like you have a table in front of you and here's an idea and you pick it up instead of sticking right in your life and try to act on it and find out the hard way if it works for you, put it on the table. So that's a lot when you're hearing anomaly things that you've never heard before or somebody says something and it's you know, you know what to think. Put it on that table and say, okay, you know, I will look at this later or see if this fits something I want to know about. The big thing is follow your intuition, your inner guidance, your INNERNET, your internet. That's been the most important thing in my quest is to I don't want to say stop listening to others, but don't just, I was trained to just swallow whatever the preacher said, hook, line, sinker, right? Instead, trust your inner guidance to hey, go look at something that's interesting to you. If the Bosnian pyramid is really, they think that's cool, or if you think crop circles are really awesome, go there. You know, don't be afraid. Go look at it. You know, whatever idea it is. If something inside you is just, man, I really want to know more than that, dig deeper. Don't just look at what the media says or the shallow, you know, end of the pool. Dig deeper of your own quest. You know, give yourself a reading ladder. A reading ladder is something I learned as an educator, is if you want to know an advanced concept, read the same idea in a simpler form, then like a introductory book, and then another higher level book, and another high, and pretty soon you're the, you know, you're really up on it, you know. That's how I've learned a lot of things, was oh wow, I really want to know about that, but oh gosh, there's a lot of math on this page or whatever. I don't understand this illustration. Step back and then work yourself through. Work at this. This is fun. To me, self-journey learning is fun. Make that your fun. Oh, I don't have time for that. Really? I mean, if you turn off the television and don't read the newspaper. I think news is so depressing. I'm just sorry. I'm just not into that. Maybe one less celebrity magazine and one less sports program. Oh, I hit somebody there. Okay. Then do this quest for yourself. And then it will also help when you're standing around with your friends and they're ridiculing you just brought up an idea that's... You'll be the expert in the room. Be the expert in the room. I have people go, oh, they want to talk to me about anal probes and tinfoil hats as a ET experiencer. And I start just blowing them away with what I know now because I've studied it. And I go, oh, big question. The lights in the sky, is it us or them? Well, it could be our craft. There's a lot of interesting stuff Brent will talk to you about that. It could be ET craft. But the point is that something there that's not intermanifest, or, you know, our agreed consensus reality, and I've been in the position to hear a lot of stories from people who've seen UFOs, because I will admit I've seen one, you know, and I'll get a little bit of teasing, and then you know, someone will take me aside and they'll say, "Man, yeah, I was out in the woods camping, and my brothers were there, and this big giant craft came over the top of us, and then it took off in the sky, and you know, that's fun, you know." It becomes fun. It's painful to be the weirdo in the room. But if you just embrace your weirdo, you know, say, "Hey, I'm the weirdo," but you learn, then I think it contributes to the... People want to talk about this, but they don't want to be the one in the room that's, you know, they don't want to stick out. So this is what these groups do, too. I have people that don't even join the group. They will just monitor it, like an experiencer's one in particular. They don't want to have their name in there because they would get teased, or it can also be an economic threat or family problem or religion problem. So they just read what's in the group, but they don't join it. So I keep this group public so that they can just read about all this, and when they're ready, they can join. That's a process. I wanted to talk... I know I've been going a while, but I wanted to talk about the economic thing as well.
All right, we've got 3 minutes.
Oh, gosh darn. Okay, our belief system is manipulated quite a bit about our economy. We're afraid to be different. I want to talk about the basic income guarantee, and I have a group that's new called The Fringe for BIG, because if we all don't have to worry about losing our job or being economically assassinated for our beliefs, then we can be very free to talk about every wacky belief that we want to, and it won't be dangerous. And we could agree to disagree, because it won't be, I have to believe this in this belief system or I starve. So that's the group, Weird Should Not Starve, or Weird Shouldn't Starve, The Fringe for the BIG. So check it out.
Excellent. So thank you so much, Karen. Listen, again, I think we're going to have some good shows in the next period. Together, we'll see if we... I mean, it feels like we've all been on a parallel journey. It's like, okay, we'll meet you in 2016, and we'll Google you. You know, just imagine, right? Imagine, like, in 1965, somebody says, "Let me just Google that for you." Would you just what? So anyway, here we are. We're in the future, and I just really relate to that thing that you were saying about, you know, being in the future, thinking that it was going to it's going to be different, or we were going to be dead, and that you find yourself more and more optimistic. I certainly feel that we've been through that. So. With that, thank you very much, everybody. This has been Journeys with JP. We're sheltering under the Nissan Hut roof. There's been a storm. The generators are running. There's a smell of kerosene in the air. Thank you very much for coming along. This has been Journeys with JP. Please hang on. I don't know who's next, but I hope there won't be too much of dead air. I'm going to finish my slot, and there won't be any music or anything like that. So, thank you once again. Good night.